Well, good morning. It is just a blessing to be here with all of you today. I'm here with my wife, Carol. Some of you have seen our family a little bit. My wife, Carol, and I have four children, a son that's 13. My daughter is Erica. Let me just go through each one. Erica's almost 16. She's not quite yet. My daughter, Erica, is 15. My son is 13. I have a daughter, Rebecca, that is 10, and Grace is 8. And we've been on a journey for the last week. We left last Saturday, and it's to present just what God is doing in the Middle East and specifically in Iraq. I'm going to be talking about Iraq. In a sense, I say we've been on a journey for the last week. We've been on a journey, my wife and I, for our whole marriage. As she entered into the call that God had on my life, and as I entered into the call that God had on her life. And then in the last number of years, 4 years ago, God took us from Holmes County, Ohio, which was where I grew up. Carol was from Hartwell, Georgia, and took us to Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And we began to feel a little bit like refugees there, not knowing almost anyone, not having family there, and all that goes with entering into a new place. As Carol helped me learn to move out of a home community, she had moved all over the West and all kinds of places. So I learned a lot from her during that season. And then God took us miraculously into a more formal union with a ministry. Up until that time, I had always been working beside ministries in small ways, nothing real big, but I began to actually work with Kingdom Channels through some supernatural connections in Lancaster. And we easily saw that that was the purpose that God had for us to move to Lancaster, but we had not moved there for that reason. So I'm coming to you today to just represent what God is doing in the Middle East. And I'm representing Kingdom Channels as a ministry. In a greater way, what is really on my heart is that I'm fulfilling what God put on my heart in my early 20s, even younger than that, even in my early years of my life, to just talk to people and motivate people to go to all the world to preach the gospel. So as I come to you today, I represent, I'm here to just represent Jesus Christ. And what I want you to hear today, I'm hoping in the midst of all the darkness that we see around us and maybe all the struggle from the last year, the things that happen that are different than normal, I'm hoping to just bring a message of hope and a message of joy to show you what God is actually doing in the world. Sometimes we get caught up in all the dark things and we forget that there's amazing things that God is doing. So I'm here to show you some amazing things. And that's really, in a sense, how I came to actually join up with Kingdom Channels was I began to walk with other people that were going to some places that I thought were very scary and began to see the commitment in their life, and it spurred me on to have a greater commitment in my life to the Lord Jesus Christ. So, Kingdom Channels started. There's kind of a story, but I'll try to go through this briefly. I also just say this, I will go as fast as I can. I've struggled to keep my time to the appropriate amount of what people can handle, and I told Carol I'm going to come in and adjust some of my slides this morning and try to reduce a few things. And when she came back in, I said, well, actually, I added three. So I apologize. I don't know what else to cut out. There's just so much that God's doing. So Kingdom Channels formed in 2016 specifically to work in the refugee crisis of northern Iraq as ISIS came in and began to persecute, not persecute, but try to annihilate a people group called the Yazidis. Since that time, though, however, because of what we're doing there, it has collected a number of people around us as a ministry that said, hey, we have a burden for the Middle East. And so our ministry is just growing by leaps and bounds in all kinds of directions, partly because our visionary that was behind our ministry named Merle is a very energetic person, and also just because I believe God has been looking at the Middle East, and I've been involved in a number of, okay, for years, I went to SMBI Bible School and worked with the water program. And years even before that, I was up at Northern Youth Programs and was working with people that were going out into the world to preach the gospel. And I saw the waves of God through young people going to all parts of the world. And I saw them go to China. I saw them go to Thailand. I saw a number of my friends that would move to New York cities, to the inner cities. And I saw it just as a group. I mean, they were going all different directions, Haiti and South America, but I saw it in waves. And suddenly what I begin to see as a person is that there is a new wave that is going to the Middle East. And so I'm involved in that right now. I don't know what the next wave will be. One of the desires of my heart is to someday walk into North Korea myself And so I don't know where God's going to go next, but wherever God is, I just want to be there, and I want to be part of what God's doing, and I believe that's what you want too. Kingdom Channels is focused on long-term work. We're not a humanitarian aid organization. We partner with people that are, but our work is to try to work with people to bring healing to their hearts and their souls and lives, and to really enter into helping them find a spiritual relationship with Jesus Christ. And for that reason, we're a church planting ministry, and that's the primary focus of why we do what we do. Just recently, as a ministry, a number of us came together and really identified the real purpose that we exist. There's been many places that people endeavor to go to preach the gospel, even here in the United States, and I myself have been part of that. But as a ministry, Kingdom Channels is going into the unreached areas. That is what we have put as our mantra before us. And we came together and just said a great purpose is discipling the people of the 1040 window to bring glory to God. And that is really the heart and soul of our ministry. And it's a huge area of the world. We will probably never get done with that area unless the Lord really pours miraculous things into us. Some of you may have heard of the 1040 window. Does anyone know what I mean when I say the 1040 window? I'm just going to explain it briefly if you aren't aware of what that is. A number of years ago, someone identified an area of the world with the most unreached people in it. They call it the 1040 window because of latitude and longitude. It's 10 degrees north of the equator to 40 degrees north of the equator, and it encompasses what you see in this picture here. It encompasses most of the Muslim nations, a lot of the communist China, encompasses Hindu nations, Buddhist nations in that area of the world. There are over 5 billion people in this area of the world that do not know Christ. There's over 5 billion people that are in this area of the world. Over 3 billion of these people are what they consider completely unreached. No one has actually, they probably never heard about Jesus Christ, or if they have, not from a Christian. They would probably not know any Christian at all. So it's just a massive amount. And I from time to time, once in a while I will share this, and I very rarely share this in front of church, but when I was in 1998, I was in a class at SMBI Bible School in the middle of Pennsylvania, and I had made it part of my life to get up early in the morning before everyone else. And as I was praying one morning, and part of a task for one of our classes was that we were to pray for Muslim countries. And as I was praying that morning, I just admitted to God, I said, you know, I actually don't have a burden for Muslim people. I'm required to pray for this, and so I'm going to fulfill my assignment. And I just was doing that as part of my devotions. And I was praying, you know, it was coming out. Have you ever prayed and it just came out dead? Like it just felt like you were praying, but it was your own mind, it was your own words. And as I prayed, I just said, Holy Spirit. I just cried out inside, and actually with verbal words. I just cried out with my mouth. I said, Holy Spirit, give me a burden for Muslims. I don't have that burden. But I actually just said those words. I said, Holy Spirit, give me a burden for Muslims. And what took place in the next moments in my life, I will never forget, and has actually changed the course of my life. As the Holy Spirit came down upon me in a way that I had never experienced before, and suddenly with my eyes I began to see an area of the world which I'm going to show you today, Iraq and Syria and all the way down to Egypt, and I began to see people falling into hell. I saw hell down below. I saw this dark area of the world, and as people were just falling into hell, suddenly I felt in my heart the heart of the Lord as he weeps for those that are lost, that don't have not had any chance to hear. And I just began weeping and weeping and weeping. In fact, it changed those next couple of days. I don't really remember what actually took place in school. I just remember, I just walked through the halls as my tears just kept coming down my face as I realized that there are many, many people and I can't reach them all. But they're dying without any knowledge of Christ. And all of us here, we have the knowledge of Christ. We have the ability to actually reach out to God, but there's people that I'm going to see someday standing before Christ that I didn't get to, that just died without Christ. And that's a really, really sobering, sobering thought. And it actually changed the course of my life. I came back from Bible school and I lined out the next 20 to 30 years of my life, just roughly things that I could do to help the vision accomplish what I felt God was putting on my heart. And so that's part of why I'm here today. I'm going to just say something real basic. We work as a ministry in countries that are closed, that do not want us there. And because of that, there's a certain risk factor that's involved. So we would actually just request that you would be careful with where you take what I'm talking today. If I tell you names of people, we would rather you wouldn't mention that. We would actually even rather our name as a family would not be put on social media, just because it could restrict what we do, or at the worst, it could cause some of the people that are working with us to be in an unsafe position. I'm going to show you a little bit Iraq, the country that Kingdom Channel started in and where our main work is involved. We are working right now in two countries, Iraq and Jordan, and then just on the verge of working in a number of others. So if you look at this map up here of Iraq, just to give you a little bit of the detail, the Mediterranean Sea is on the left. If you look at the north up there of that map, it's the country of Turkey, Syria is on the left, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Iran is to the right. We work in a northern area which is called Kurdistan, and that is that top part of Iraq. Kurdistan is like a state within Iraq, and if you look at that whole area there, that is what I would probably consider the safest place on that whole map. And in, interestingly enough, and part of the safety factors there is that the Kurdish people are fairly pro-American, and it's partly because of some of the wars that have been fought, and America was actually looked at in some ways for them as a liberator. But if you look at this map, what's amazing to us as a ministry is that it's right in the center. The place that God has placed us is right in the center of this country. So if you think about the spokes of a wheel, as we begin to take ground in that area, we believe God can just shoot arrows right out of that into all of those others, as we reach people that will then, we hope, go to reach others. So we're excited about what God's doing in that northern area of Kurdistan. I'm going to show you a picture of what my wife and I experienced a year ago. We were there as a family for an entire month. A number of these people have been there for years, not all of them, some just for periods of time. So there's actually many on this picture that have since come home. But this is kind of a representation of the amount of people that we have over there right now. And what is currently about 20 people is due to swell to about 40 people in about another month, because COVID had really restricted people down this summer. So we only had, at the least, we had 3 people on the one team and 8 people on the other team. This is 2 teams that we have in northern Iraq. So this is, we come from a wide variety of backgrounds, all people that God has touched in some way with the Middle East. One of the most common things that I hear is people are young ladies and young men that are in their early 20s, and they comment that when I was 13 and 14, God touched me and talked to me and said, someday I want you to go to the Middle East. And that's an amazing thing to hear out of people's mouths. I hear it so many times that I just smile when I hear it, because I just say, God actually called you, and he called you years ago, just like he called me. So right now, just an amazing thing to show God is working in the United States, in the hearts of young people. God is actually calling people. In fact, right now, God is calling people. There are people right now that are maybe not at the age yet that they can go, but God is speaking to them, and God is going to send them. And some of you in this audience might even be some of them. So I want you to think about this. Ask yourself that question. I'm going to talk today a little bit and use a word called ISIS. I believe many of us have heard this through the news. We have a certain thing that comes to our mind when we think of ISIS. There's some darkness that might come to your mind when you think of ISIS, and I'm going to tell you some dark things, and I apologize for that. But I'm doing that for the purpose of also showing you what God can take that's dark to bring light to people. And so we should not dwell on the darkness. Please be careful. Do not think about the dark things I'm talking to you about. I'm here to talk to you about light, and God wants us to dwell in light. So when we talk about northern Iraq and what took place in northern Iraq, I will have to show you this picture. This is a picture of war. This is actually some buildings that were being blown up very close to these. All of these pictures that I'm showing you, except maybe one or two that we would have accessed on the internet, but all of these were taken by people that I know or you know that were over there in the Middle East. So this is a scene right behind where someone was living. Many of us can't even imagine looking out our kitchen window and looking at a scene like this, and knowing that that represented soldiers, and then the next scene, seeing soldiers coming down your street. But I want to give you this picture so that you think about the refugees that I'm going to talk about have been, they have seen this, and this is a reality in their life. Now I'm going to just show you a short clip of a number of pictures pasted together to give you a little bit of the story of how it came that Kingdom Channels came to be in northern Iraq. And it started in August of 2014. When ISIS swept into northern Iraq and began to take a large area of land. I also want to point out, and I've said just a little bit, we work with Yazidi people. It was a people that were looked at as Satan worshipers, and because of that, ISIS, because of the radical Islamic view, decided that they should be wiped off the face of the earth. What's interesting is that that people group has, it's 800,000 people in this people group called Yazidis. They dress Middle Eastern. For us, we would look at them and think they look Muslim. And because of their dress, they look very similar. But when you begin to ask them their religion, it's very, 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 very different in some ways. And the other thing about them is they're very, very close to the gospel. They believe that they descended from Adam, not from Eve, and the rest of the world is descendants of Adam and Eve. So you can't become a Yazidi, and you can't even be born a Yazidi unless you have both of your parents were Yazidis before. So up until this time that ISIS came through, they didn't even listen. They didn't even want us. They didn't allow any Christians to live with them. And it's the first time in the history that they have actually been open to allowing people to come and work and be in their groups. So just this gives a little bit of the story. Some of these scenes are just a little bit graphic, but it's just true things that took place. I'm sorry, this is a little video here. So in August 3 of 2014, ISIS swept into northern Iraq. This picture of soldiers was a scene that took place for many people that we work with. They came with their guns, with their black clothes, bringing a lot of fear with them. So right down through the centers of towns, people really had very little ability to fight because the army that had been there protecting got so scared that they just all ran, and one night they all just evaporated out of there. And so suddenly there was many towns that were left. One of the saddest things were the young ladies that got taken captive and the trauma and abuse that they went through. Many people escaped to a mountain, and that's what this picture is. You can see the burned remnants of cars that are still there. People just loaded up as fast as they could to try to escape in some cases, but then they ended up with huge crisis as they were in the mountain with little food or water. This was a scene that was taken by a photographer, like a journalist, as he just documented the thousands and thousands that came. Tens of thousands actually fled on foot, but once they were at the high mountain, they might have had their physical safety, but then they had a new problem, and that was just the issue of staying alive in that place, as there was a crisis that took place. And in the process of all that took place, a lot of very, very hurting people, children, just fear in people's eyes. I think many of us can't even quite imagine what it would be like to have been in that position. And that represents a lot of around the world what is taking place with refugees in all number of countries, not just Iraq, but in Greece and in Syria and coming out of Iran into Serbia, many different places. And today, this is a refugee camp. There are many different ways that they set refugee camps up, but many people are alive in those today, have lived in there for 6-7 years. Really touches you when you see these young children that are just trying to grapple to understand why their life is what it is. They don't understand differences between normal life and what they have, because this is all they know as normal. Food lines to try to get some kind of sustenance. Just beautiful, beautiful children. You just want to grab them and hug them when you see them. And I love this question, is there hope for these people? We all know that the answer to that question is there are hope. There are hope for all the peoples in the Middle East. There is hope for the Yazidi people that have been through a lot. So I'm going to just show you briefly just a little bit of their story, and then I'll talk about our response, which I believe should be our response as a Christian to anybody that needs Christ. On the road to Sinjar, as they fled, and I'll just tell you very briefly, the story that took place, and it was kind of universal across northern Iraq with the Yazidis, was that the ISIS soldiers would come into their village and give them a question. They just said, if you will lay down your weapons and give them to us, we will let you be. We are going to control this land, but we will allow you to continue life as normal. And if you don't, then you're going to have to face the wrath that we will have. And so they had a choice to make. And so the elders of the towns, Yazidi people, like a lot of the Middle Eastern people, are very family-oriented. Their huge family units would live in towns together, aunts and uncles with lots of children. So the elders of the town basically came together, and so they had a choice to make. And a number of them made the choice and just said, we do not trust ISIS. They would turn their generators on, make it look like everything was going, lights were on in the house, and then in one night they would just leave. And that was within a day or two of when they were posed this question. And the second group of people, they came together and they said, hey, look, we don't want to leave where we have. We think that ISIS is going to be okay. we're going to just stay put. We'll give them our weapons. We believe that they will treat us okay. Well, that group of people were the group that fared the worst, because as soon as they handed over their weapons, ISIS just basically came in and rounded everybody up in the middle of the town, took the men and boys over 15 years of age, and we never have heard from them again. They were, the ladies here heard shots going off, and we see mass graves. In the process of that, ladies and children were taken by bus and just taken back into ISIS territory that they had already established, and were sold as slaves, were abused, were just taken, like any number of evil things were taking place. And these are people that we still work with. Whether you realize this or not, there are many people that are still coming back from ISIS. There are young ladies and children that are still escaping out of ISIS control. They may not hold land, but they still have people that believe in that ideology. And as they were forced to flee from the governments of the world, as they had fighting, they just took those slaves with them. So it's something that's an ongoing crisis that continues. The others that fled for their life fled to this mountain, like I said, and this is on the Mount Sinjar as they went up. And that scene that you saw earlier with just people, mass people leaving, they were coming right up through some of these areas that they see on foot, which was actually almost easier because as vehicles would come up, they would get bogged down. I'll just say this and then I'll go on quickly. What took place often was as they were running for their life, they would look back and they could see soldiers coming behind them, capturing people that they knew, shooting people they knew, leading away captive. We talked to ladies that have had that had one-day-old babies that were picking up their baby and their young toddlers as they had numbers of children, like 8-10 children is not uncommon for a family, and they were running for their life with a day-old baby, and they experienced a lot of this. Once they got to the top of the mountain, just horrific stuff took place. They had nothing for their babies. Some of the ladies have scars on their wrists from actually feeding their babies blood just to keep them alive. It's kind of a gruesome thing. Their houses now look like this because of a lot of the fighting that took place in those villages with people trying to get ISIS out. But you know, you can clean up a house, but what is harder is someone's life. As this man here experienced, his whole entire family was missing or captured, and he had no idea where they were, and he was just in total trauma and grief with that. And it was out of this that Kingdom Channels was born. And I'm going to tell you just briefly how it took place. A person that I work with named Merle Weaver had been praying for this area of the world in northern Iraq for a number of years. And as he saw the crisis unfolding, along with some others, they just said, look, is there a way we can reach into this crisis? And a number of people just came together, paid for their own ticket, or someone would help, people, family members would help sponsor a ticket for just 2 weeks to go over and just help basically keep people alive, giving them kerosene for keeping warm, giving them food, water, any way that they could. In fact, what began to take place was that they identified a village that a number of the ISIS men, I'm sorry, number of the Yazidi men had built houses, but they were unfinished houses. As soon as they fled for their life, a number of them fled for this small village because they knew that there was block houses there with no one occupying them. And they would just pack one family in a group into a house. So the house might have 3 or 4 families in it, but they had no windows, no doors. The roofs were even uncovered at times. And so the group that went over for helping the crisis went and just took 2x4s and plastic, helped fill in windows as it was beginning to rain and get really cold, and just began to minister in that way just by giving physical things. There was no septic set up. Everything was just open running. They did that kind of work. In the process of all of that, they did reach into the crisis for about a year, year and a half, and took care of those immediate needs right there. But there were relationships built. And some of them that were in that group just said, well, okay, as the team is moving on to other areas that have crisis, that have greater crisis than what we have here anymore, that's fine. But, you know, we've built all these relationships, and what was that for? Like, they haven't accepted Christ. They're actually still going to die in their sin. And they came together and just said, look, is there a way that we could reach into their lives and bring Christ and embed with them long term? And that was where Kingdom Channels was born, with kind of two things. One, we want to reach the Yazidi people, and we want to do it as a group, bringing what we have, we believe we have as Anabaptists. We have family values. We have ways that we live in such a way that we believe are biblical, that are very similar to the way the Middle Eastern people live. They dress fairly modestly, actually. They have a lot of good things. They just don't have Christ. So I'm going to just show a little bit of what took place then. So what took place during that time was we realized that you can't go to northern Iraq and just say, I want to be a missionary. I mean, they will kick you out so fast, or at worst, you will be in very high danger. So you have to have a reason to live there. And so one of the things that they identified that was a need in that area was that people love to know the language of English because it opens up opportunities for them. And they discovered that through working with the refugee children as they began teaching them words of English And they realized that this would be a valid reason that we could live in this area and stay there long term. So an English base was set up, and it was a small school. In a sense, we talk about our school. In a sense, it would just be like if you would go down the street here and rent a house and let it known in the community, we will teach English if you come. And initially, it started with the children. Children didn't have anything to do. They would come. They would learn English. Their parents were glad for that because that meant their children could someday go to university because they knew English. In fact, in that area of the world, if you know English, you get paid if you're an English translator, you can get paid the same price as a medical doctor. So you are like highly esteemed if you know English. And one thing that we've had that was fascinating is we started noticing that even the whole village is the whole academics of the whole village is going up simply because we're there, because suddenly they're realizing, I'm knowing English, I can go to university, I need to try harder in school because I have a future ahead of me. So it's brought good in that sense. The second thing that English classes do was by interacting with people, they allow us and enable us to be able to just speak into people's lives over and over on a daily basis and establish relationship. And that translates not just to a student, but it actually, the parents invite us then into their homes in the evenings for tea and for meals, which is a very common thing for the Middle East to do that. And it's so much so that this is like, you're actually turned down appointments. Like it's almost every single night of the week you have an invitation into a person's home if you're living there. So the English classes, what we look at right here in front of us, looks like a simple little class of Sunday school children if you look at that. In reality, when you look at that, you need to think in a whole different mindset. These are boys that experienced the trauma that I showed you before, and if someone does not show them the correct way, these will be the next terrorists that we will hear about in the news 20 years from now as they begin to act out of unforgiveness and begin to take revenge on what took place in their lives and the trauma that's in their lives. And so as we've taught there and worked with them, I'll just show you a few of the classes. This is a class of young teenagers. We've noticed that as we built trust in that community, that the older ones slowly come out. We have classes for teenagers. In fact, our average age is getting to be more of that age rather than just the young children. We do still work with the young children. We have older adults that come and say, can I learn English? And we'll take anyone, just anyone that we can build a relationship with. Here's a young class. Some of these are so active and young. It's just an amazing thing to see some of these young children, their joy and zeal and just the fun that it is to work with children and see them just come together and come in a class and share with you, especially from another culture like that. It's a lot of interesting things for some of the volunteers that are living there. I'm going to just show you a little clip just because it's so cute and unique. This was from early in the time that we were there. This is going to buzz a little bit, but this is a class of children that, let me just put it here, that were being taught words of English, and then at the same time were taught some Christian songs. And this was a very common thing, especially in the early days, to be able to listen from the roof of the house where you could go up on your flat roof and you could hear the children singing these songs throughout the village. So just listen and enjoy this. Okay, we need to turn the volume up here a little bit. I'm experiencing technical here. Let me just check something and make sure that, okay, I've got the issue here. Now I'm going to start it, and if it jumps too loud, I'll hold your ears here. That's good. Now, I often comment, my children have heard me say this many times, but the next 5 seconds of that video, you don't even see but it's a lot of action and jumping, and it takes a little bit of work to actually keep people in control a little bit because they love to jump and shout. I know some of these, I've been in some of their homes, just beautiful children have had their dads say, hey, look at this song that my children are singing in English that you taught them, and just showed it to me on their phone, which is an amazing thing to me. Through the English school, though, however, I'll just say through this all, you know, it's not about teaching English. It's about the opportunities that it opens up. So as you're there and as you build a relationship, it opens up just a plethora of opportunities for people to be involved in. This is the main room of the house that we rent. People, the children especially, come back. We have small little games there that we play with them, blocks. We have Connect Four. In fact, amazing thing when I was there, they're just as intelligent as we are. I was playing Connect Four with this young man that's about 15. Absolutely could not beat him. I mean, I loved Connect Four as a child. I thought I was fairly good at it. I finally started feeling like I'd give up. I won like maybe 3 games out of about 35 games. So just amazing thing to see just the activeness of that. But in the midst of all of that, what we see in class, we probably don't share a lot of Christ in class other than just giving them joy in our lives. But it's outside of class is where it all takes place. It's when they walk with us and begin to ask us questions. One of the ladies that's been there for, she's on her 5th term there. She's right there on the left. She cooks for the group, and at the same time, she has an English class in the evening with one of the mothers that you see in that picture. She invites the children into her kitchen, which is very small, probably about a 10 by 12 kitchen there that you're seeing. She's hiding there on the left behind a leaf with some of the students. She puts them to work sometimes. Just amazing opportunities that it opens up. I show this picture here just because I want you to know it's not just for younger people to go over. This is the oldest person that we have that's lived with us for a number of years. His wife died a number of years ago, and he asked us, can I come and just live there long term? And he's been a huge blessing. He's known as grandfather. And in the village, he's highly esteemed because of his age. It's very common for them to tell us a story. And I think you and I would both know the stories he tells are solely parables out of the Bible, stories of faith. Stories of what Jesus taught on earth, and in that way he's spreading the truth as they just continue to reach out for stories of light. I was sharing earlier about going to the evenings to share tea in places. This was right in the center is one of the volunteers that's been there long term, and she has that on a normal basis, sharing with these students that are around her. Very good relationships develop. It's a very segregated culture because of the Middle East. They believe men and women are separate. So you'll notice that with most of the pictures. A lady that we have here, she's been there for 5 years, has learned Kurdish within a year or two. She's really gifted with language. She's learned Arabic now as well. So amazing opportunities that she has had just because of the length of time that she's there, seeing a number of young ladies come to Christ, which is just an amazing thing to see the changes that take place. A number of the volunteers there love to play volleyball, and as there's older teenagers there, they gathered them together about a year and a half, 2 years ago, and just said, let's start a volleyball tournament, and not just a tournament, but a weekly, nightly thing where they play volleyball together. And in that way, they build a relationship. It's, not all the teams play at the same time. There's also a little bit of squabbling that goes on, and there's lots of opportunity to share Christian love in that environment as well, which is an amazing thing. I'll show you a few pictures of our family, not just to show our family, but to show you that there's opportunities for anybody. You don't have to be older. Our family experienced what they've commonly told us is that as a family goes in, within a month, we can get to about the place that a number of them that are volunteers might take 6 months to get to, because the Middle East views families as the correct unit. Everyone lives in a family. It's very uncommon for someone to just live as a single or with two other singles in a house. So it was a normal thing for us from day one to have little children knocking on the door wanting the children to come out and play. It was really hard to do our homeschool there during that period of time because we just kind of said, well, we almost about gave up. We just said, well, go out and play. This is their time for us to be there. My son enjoyed playing out in the yard with a number of his friends. He had played inside games with them. It was a unique thing that happens in the Middle East is that they work together as family units, and they don't just do it when they're outside. They also do it when they're playing a game. So as soon as one of them would start losing, they would suddenly start sharing pieces with each other to the point where Randall came to me and said, well, I can never win. Like they just give each other help. And we talked through that a little bit. But, part of it was that it's not really all about winning the game for us. As Randall and I are very competitive, we like to win, but it's about being with people. My daughter at 14 was able to engage in the teaching English classes. And I point this out because I want you to know that it doesn't take some special training to teach English. If you can speak English like what I've heard any of you speak, you are a qualified English teacher, because language is just a thing of transmitting words. You can look at a wall and say, that's a wall. You can look at your hand and say, that's a hand, and that's how language is transmitted. And so it's a lot just transmitting language, but at the same time building relationships with them. We found it fascinating that a number of the young girls said, well, when are we going to bake cookies together? Because one of the former teachers had done that. And so they really weren't even just there to learn English. They were there to actually just be with you. And that was an amazing thing to see happen. I'm going to throw this in, and then this is just kind of an out-of-place slide in a way, but it's a number of the other opportunities that just have opened up in front of us. One of the things we discovered was that they have no Bible in their language, in their dialect of Kurdish. There's a Kurdish Bible, but not in their dialect. And so a number that got a burden for the reaching into their lives with material came together and formed a little translation team, and have since that time have been able to translate a book called Is God Really My Father, addressing that issue, because that's very misunderstood in Middle Eastern context, as they view, specifically Muslim people view Allah as a harsh, harsh father. They would not think that you could have a relationship with someone like that. Since that time, we've been able to print a book that is 25 stories out of the Bible, and they're now working on some more stories right now. This is an ongoing thing that is just simply funded by volunteers or people that care about it enough that want to just give money into the fact. So someone last year gave around $800 and were able to print this book. We need funds right now to just print a new printing of these 25 Bible stories. So it's just a small little project, but it's just an ongoing way to reach into their lives. So amazing opportunities that we would have never thought possible a number of years ago. In the process of being there as a group teaching English, I'm going to just show you some of the development work that took place then further. I said we had two teams. So the one team is teaching English, and we call it the main base because they work out of there, they have their office out of there. But what took place for many of them was as they were working with the refugees, as they began hearing their stories, they're just heartrending. And I can just say that from my own life. I've had days when I was depressed for a day or so as I thought about the darkness that people had. And I'll just share this. As you look at this picture, this is another picture of a refugee camp. You know, you might see a picture like this on the news, but what makes the difference is when you're inside one of those huts and see someone face to face, and they tell you that four of my children are still missing, and there are three of them are daughters, another one's sons. And we even know that they're alive because they were able to sneak a phone and give us a call, but they can't get out. And that just, it just tears at your heart. And in addition to that, what's really hard is when you go into one of these homes and you see a young lady that has been with ISIS, was sold for like a pack of cigarettes or even as high as $1,000 to an ISIS fighter, and then maybe sold off later to somebody else and has come back, that just has, their life has just been completely stripped of anything humane in their life. And they have two or three children with them that are not Yazidi anymore. And so they're partially ISIS born. And so they come back and the whole community rejects those children. They don't want anything to do with them. Even at times, their parents have caused them to actually kill their own children because they weren't Yazidi. That's how dark it is in their society. But as you see that, one of the things that was just a cry that rose up from a number of people was, how can we help these young ladies? And so a team was formed a couple of years ago, about 2 years ago, that we call the Restoration Team. This is the team minus the lady in the middle. She's since came home, the one in the green. And they simply go around and find those contacts and establish relationship with them. That we have around 61 contacts right now that are young ladies that had this take place in their life. And there's constantly people that are coming back, so their numbers are growing. At the same time, some of them are emigrating out, but we continue to keep contact with them as they're moving to other countries. So the Restoration Team, their purpose is to find the young ladies and to minister in their life and just show them Christ. This is one of the sadder pictures I'm going to show you. This is a young lady while she was with her ISIS captor. And this same lady is right here in this picture right here. She has a young child that's not pictured right there. She's with one of our volunteers there on the left. She became a Christian as she came out as a result of reaching into her life. She's also been being discipled, but she also has joy in her life, and she's for the first time seeing hope that she didn't have before. One of the saddest things that we experience is that there are many of these ladies that are so absolutely devastated that they finally give up and just take kerosene and pour it on themselves and burn themselves and try to commit suicide, which is something that we have seen happen. And we've often asked ourselves, well, what if we would have had a bigger team? What if we would have had more teams there? What if we could have reached that one there that we weren't able to reach in their life? This is a picture that's really heart-wrenching as you see it. You know, a number of us know and think about our houses at home. We might have a picture of family members or family groups that we were a part of on this wall. This lady, that's an older lady, her husband was shot and killed, assuming that she's never seen him again. These are all pictures of her relatives or children that are missing right now. She has no idea where they are. This is This picture right here are the young ladies. Interspersed, you can kind of see the ones that are American there, just by their little bit difference in skin color. But they bring the ladies out to their base where we have English classes with them, actually sewing classes, any number of different classes, just finding things and ways that we can reach into their life to build a relationship, and at the same time enable them to actually share among themselves a little bit some of the trauma that has taken place, and to be able to receive healing for some of this just by being able to have someone to love them and comfort them. One of the things that we've heard commonly is some of the young ladies just said to us, "I've never really ever experienced love before until I met some of you." Here in this picture, a more uncommon thing for our ministry, we're not a humanitarian ministry, but there's some of them that we identify that really their greatest need is just simply food. And it is really hard when you see somebody in front of you that just doesn't have enough to eat. And so many times what happens on the field is people that are there just simply take some of the extra money that they have and begin putting it together. So we have around 10 pooling their money and taking just a little bit of food aid or relief aid into people's lives. And we are kind of opening up that as an opportunity for people. If people want to join with that part of our ministry, it gives us the ability to go into people's houses, because you reach into their life every single month and show up at the door and say, "Here's about $60 worth of food," just to help some of these widows that have young children. Some of them have large families, 8 children that they're still supporting, and help them just get through that month. And it gives us also ability to work in their lives and just be able to talk to them, which was like this case right here. These are 2 children. I was actually in their home. I was with the mother and the grandmother and a few of their siblings about 2 years ago when I was there by myself. And they shared with us that there's 4 of their siblings that are still missing. They have no idea where they are. We were praying with them, and suddenly one day 2 of the siblings showed up at the door, and these are the 2 that are circled right there. And then we were able to walk with them as they were able to integrate them back into their family after being gone for like 4 days or so. Another thing that we haven't said, that I haven't really focused on very much, that's taking place in Iraq there, is that there are a number of boys that were from the ages of 10 to 15 that were taken at the same time as their mothers were taken. And instead of being allowed to live with their mother, they were actually taken completely away. There was around 1,000 boys placed in a school at one point, put through a military training to try to help them to learn how to build bombs and to fight basically militarily, and then put out on the front lines. And it's a really, really sad group of boys, because they were stripped from their school, stripped out of their normal life, and then have come back, some of them as they escaped, or some even just ISIS, as they had to flee. They were unable to even hold them back. Some of them came back, and we find them in their houses or huts or wherever we find them. We find them just not able to integrate back into society. We often just see them playing on their phones, playing war games or things like that. In fact, it's kind of a dangerous group that we've identified, that we wonder where they're going to end up because of all of that they've been through. So we've started an extensive work among boys to really work with them for hours at a time each week for any of them that will come. And it's not an easy thing to get some of them to come to our classes, but we have about 3 or 4 of them right now that come regularly that we work with. And we share English with them, because that's a reason. It kind of gives them like a reason that they want to come to these classes. And then at the same time, we share a story of truth, which is out of the Bible. And then in addition to that, we teach them some music lessons, just helping them learn to express themselves. And part of that is because of what took place right when we first started. We asked one of the men that's there, one of the family fathers, just said, "Well, would you like to learn something about woodworking?" He asked one of the boys. And one of the boys just immediately responded without even really thinking. He just said, "Well, I don't really know anything about woodworking. I could actually build a bomb if you want me to show you how to do that." And he just, like, the father just grappled with that. He just said, he just couldn't believe what he just heard. He didn't even say anything. He's kind of a really quiet-natured person. Suddenly the young boy became really uncomfortable, and he just said through the translator, is he mad at me because I shared that?" And we immediately responded back. The father just said, "No, it's just that we want to help you use your life for good and for building people up." So this is kind of the mindset that they have. And so we just feel like if we can work with them, if we can show them truth, we're going to have people that have been through a lot that will be able to be leaders in their community, men especially, as they lead and begin to lead out. We see this as a new generation of warriors for the Lord, not for the enemy. So we're excited to see what takes place. This was a small this was a small gathering of them. This was not while I was there, but it was in the same place that we were living. And as I should just play a little clip of this. This is a little video just to show you some of the songs in their own Kurdish way, sitting on the ground. Kind of precious, actually. Maybe I'll just stop it. It's fairly long, but I guess what I want to portray to you is just the fact that, like, those that have dwelt in darkness can have light. Now, I'm not saying that any of these have accepted Christ, but they are having an opportunity to learn. They have an opportunity for the first time their eyes open. Some of these young men that are on the back here, they were literally on the front lines. I'm sorry. They were on the front lines of ISIS 2 or 3 months before this. Some of them have shrapnel on their legs. They talk about giving each other a high five when they shot somebody. This is what has gone through their mind. At the same time, they're now showing another way. And so we're excited to see where that goes. I noticed when I was there, we took these classes and they were in our house. And as I was able to be there, I couldn't speak their language. We had to hire someone. In fact, that lady, the man that's leading the guitar singing, he has their language and he's from the community there. And he's a believer, a very, very strong believer, by the way. And as I was there, though, and I was sharing with the young boy, God just supernaturally brought across my path as they went in the one day. I started playing a small little game with a ball with one of the boys, and we just played it out as the rest of them went on with their class. And from that time forward, we had a bond that we would often sit together in class. And it's those relationships as you build a bond, and then as they have an ability to talk with you, and as you learn their language, and as you're able to just communicate truth that is beginning to build in people's lives where it has destruction before. So it's an exciting thing for us to see this take place. Now I'm going to just share a number of other things because Kingdom Channels is bigger than just Iraq. And I'm going to share just a little bit of where our ministry is going. So one of the things I shared earlier was that as we began to work in Iraq, a number of people came forward and just said, well, we have a burden and it's for refugees, but it's in other areas or in other areas of the Middle East. And what we found is that we find it amazing. We'll find 2 or 3 people that don't know each other and they'll all say, I just have such a strong burden, like for the country of Afghanistan. We have a number of people said, I have such a strong burden for the country of Yemen. I have such a strong burden for this country area of the world. And what we're trying to do is pair those people up and allow them to just talk and dialogue and begin to form teams to be able to go into those areas. So we started, through our ministry, another smaller, like a ministry that's a sub-ministry, a committee out of ours, called Advance 1040. And this is to go into the entire 1040 window and to figure out a way to get in. So the first step is often training or something that needs to be done. So it's to spread Christ. The whole purpose is just like Kingdom Channels, to spread Christ in those areas and with whatever means that we have. So one of the areas that we first identified that was a huge need for us as a group in Iraq was that we needed to have language learning. So we found in the country of Jordan a small school that was put on by Christians that taught Arabic very fast and very well, and was their purpose was there to enable believers to go into the rest of the 1040 window. So we've been able to collaborate with them. We have a team that lives there and several houses rented for the ladies and for the men to live there in Jordan and to learn language. In about a year's time, you can learn the tongue of Arabic, which is no small feat because that is one of the harder languages of the world to learn. And it's a very, very, very widely spoken language. There's a number of the people that we work with, all of them speak Kurdish, but most of them also speak Arabic. And it's universal then if you can work with there or you can work in other parts of the world. So we're excited to see what God's doing through the Arabic school. As you learn Arabic, you then need to practice because you have to have other Arabic speakers to speak with. So one of the exciting things through that process is that a requirement of the school is that you go door to door and find people that will visit with you in Arabic. Well, that just opens up all kinds of amazing opportunities, especially this summer when things were closed down. You couldn't even almost leave the places where you were. So our team, one of the the girls especially were in a housing project filled with Iraqi refugees. And as they would go door to door, they literally could knock on the door and begin to speak with people that hadn't gone out in days. And you could begin to just transmit back and forth. One of the stories that is a most amazing story is as about a year and a half ago, a very close friend of ours, that one of the volunteers that you saw there earlier, as she went to the door, her and her friend that went to that door, a family invited them in, a man and wife. And as they talked with them that time or the next time, they shared with her quietly, they said, "My wife and I are actually secret believers. We became Christians recently, but we don't know anything. We're just trying to figure out what is, like, we know that the Muslim way is not the way." They said, "We have a Bible hidden into the trunk of our car that we read. We won't even tell our children that we have it or that we're Christians, because if they tell our relatives, they will probably come and try to kill us." And so we begin to just work with them with discipleship in their life and begin to help them connect with other Christians. So just amazing stuff. And this is not an uncommon story. This is going across all the Middle East. God is moving. God is moving in the Middle East. It's just a matter of, are we there to help guide some of them forward to receive their truth? I'm going to share another small training that we have. This is called Focus. This takes place every year for about 2 weeks. And it's just a general missions training that's focused on reaching into refugees' lives. My wife and I have been a part of this for the last four years. And just to be honest with you, this is one of our highlights of our year at this point. We really, really enjoy it. This year, we just had a really close time. Someone wrote an article in our newsletter, just said God met us, and that's really just the bottom line. It's a coming together of a number of people that have a heart for the Middle East, and at the same time, we usually bring some of our volunteers back and have them there and share some of their personal experiences, and it helps us all to learn and grow, because we're walking and learning to live in areas of the world that are not normal for us as Anabaptists to learn and to live in, and we have different realities than you've ever had before. Another training that we've been able to put on that God's opened up a door is called T3, standing for Tactical 3. And it's a teamwork training to teach people to learn together, to learn to work together as a team. We use crisis response skills to teach this, but our real endeavor is really not those crisis response skills. It's really to learn to get, what will you do when you're under pressure? And how will you work as a team? Will you crack, or what will happen in your life? So it's an amazing thing to see a group of students come through an entire week and at the end of the week be able to communicate fast and well. And we give them all kinds of physical things and teamwork things that they're going to have to accomplish. And they need to do it as a group and then evaluate, how did you do? If you would have been shot at, what would you have done here in this situation? We talked to you. If you get shot at with a machine gun and you're in a team, what are you going to do? Are you going to run? Are you going to drop? How do you respond to that? What if a bomb goes off in your building and three of you are incapacitated? Are you going to run for your life, or are you going to try to pick them up? And how are you going to get them out safely? So it just encompasses a lot of ways to think. So we're excited to see where that goes. We require everyone that's on the field long-term to take this training. Most of these trainings that I'm showing you are just open for anybody to join, though. Anybody that's going to work in any kind of mission or ministry in the Middle East or beyond. Another one I just should point out, just in case someone has interest, is that it's not a requirement that you learn and have a certificate in teaching English, but it's a helpful thing. So we have a training that's called TESOL. Widely known, widely recognized, it's taught across the world. It stands for Teaching English to Speakers of Other Languages. And in a 4 weeks' time, we have a teacher that comes every June that will enable our volunteers to go through this, as well as other volunteers from organizations to come, and they can learn skills that will really especially help with language transmission. Now, these are a few slides that I just added in because I wanted to just present some of the vision going forward in the future. There are all kinds of ways to reach into the Middle East. One of them is through demining. One of the big issues that we've faced in Iraq is that a number of the people that we work with, the Yazidis, want to move back to the northern areas of Iraq. And they can't, because some of the areas are just so filled with explosives and landmines. And so right now we have a young man and several others that are working to develop those skills of demining to be able to move back into the northern area of Iraq. The first step was to learn Arabic. And so a young man is in Jordan right now learning the tongue of Arabic so that when he moves back to Iraq, which he had spent some time in already prior to this, he can begin to work and begin to communicate with people, and at the same time begin to defuse landmines, and in that way just begin to show the love of Christ. In a sense, do the same thing that our English school did in another completely different way, bringing the love of Christ living with people long-term, it's going to take years before all of these landmines are cleaned out. So right now, there's three people that are waiting to just take their training. As soon as they get their Arabic and their language learning done, they're going to go to Kosovo to take training in defusing landmines, and then going and getting a certification for that, and then being able to do that long-term and embed in that. It's a real amazing thing to be able to walk with people, because one of the things we've identified is that, you know, nations of the world do some things like this, but they go in for a completely different reason than we do. They don't go in with the realization that our fearlessness and our courage that we display in front of them, because we're trusting in the Lord, we're not trusting in our nation. We're going in with the love of Jesus Christ. We're doing this for a completely different reason. We're doing it because we want to show God's love. And that is very, very powerful in people's lives. So amazing things that can take place through that. There's a number of other things. I maybe won't mention it, but we can talk about it if someone has questions. One of the other things that we're hoping to do in the near future is there are a number of people that have identified that they are going to be joining a team for doing aerial insertion. So one of the things that took place in 2014, when the people were up on the mountain and could not receive food, if people could have flown in and dropped in and begin to distribute food, it would have kept things. There would have been a number of people that could have stayed alive. And so there's a number of young people that are coming forward that are taking. They're just about to take it probably this coming fall, a year from now. They're going to take aerial insertion training where they'll literally be able to drive out of a helicopter or out of an airplane and begin to practice what that would be like and get a certification in that, so that when a crisis does arrive, they're already trained, ready to go in and begin to just try to start some of that basic groundwork, and then in the process begin to open the doors for a longer work like Kingdom Channels comes in to do evangelism. So the question that is here in front of you, posed in front of you, and I just want you to just draw yourself spiritually to think about what God's calling for every one of us. God's placed an opportunity in front of us. What are we going to do about it? And when I say opportunity, I'm saying the opportunity of the entire Middle East is in front of us. There's people that are reaching out for help. They don't even know it. I was reading with the Sunday school class last Sunday out of Romans, when they said, like, people that have not heard, God has actually pursued them in chapter 10. It's an amazing thing to think about, that God is actually pursuing people on the other side of the world, but he's pursuing them through every one of us. So the question is, what are we going to do about that? But instead of asking the question, what am I going to do? I'd love to just pose another question, and as an alternate question to that, that I'd love for people to think about. Ask the question, what does God want done? And when you stop focusing on what can I do and looking at our own small things in our life that we have to offer and begin to ask the question, what does God want done? Suddenly, the world opens up, because there's meaningful answers to that question, what does God want done? And I want to just help you think about something out of the Bible. In this northern area of Iraq here, that specifically that area that's circled with red right there, that is known as the Nineveh Plains. And as I share that term, Nineveh Plains, I'm assuming that most of you would think about Nineveh, and the first person that you think about in the Bible is Jonah. Jonah was sent to Nineveh. And when we think about Jonah and his life and the call that he had on his life to go to Nineveh, it's an interesting thing to pose the question, why did he not go? And I don't know if you've ever addressed this question, really thought through it. There was a reason. He had some really strong reasons that he didn't want to go. I identified just myself personally some things that I look at his life, and I suspect that these were reasons that he didn't go. Some of these are not implicitly stated in Scripture, but some of these we know. The Israelites were enemies of the Ninevites, or maybe say it this way, the Ninevites were a brutal, horrific people, and when they attacked, they did not treat the Israelites well. They were known all over that area to all of the other nations as well as especially brutal people. In fact, they were even worse than ISIS. They were really, really bad. So one of the reasons that many people have said that Jonah didn't want to go was he actually wished that God would wipe them off the map. He didn't want them to go. So he hated them as his enemies. A second thing that we are not implicitly told, but it would be understood in our thinking if we think about it, is that he had a certain degree of fear in his life, probably, with reaching out to the Ninevites. You know, we are told in Scripture that God told Jonah to go, but we are never told that God gave Jonah an assurance that he was going to come back. He went to the Ninevites, and he was called to go to the Ninevites, but God did not tell him he's not going to die in the process. That's an amazing thing to think about, and it does put a different slant on it that when he didn't want to go, maybe it was like most of us, he wanted to live his life. The third thing that I see in Jonah's life is I look at Jonah and I look at the processes that it took to get him there. But then when he was actually there and saw God miraculously bring revival to the city, but he was still sitting out on a hill at one point under a vine, wishing that they would be decimated, wishing that they wouldn't have mercy in their life. And in fact, he says to God, well, I knew you were a merciful God, and I knew you would do this. And at the same time, it's amazing that he had the freedom within himself to actually talk back and forth to God this way. And he got mad at God when the vine died over his head. And it said that he was faint as he was there. And I think to myself, as I look at all of these three things, that these three encompass three things that I've struggled with in my life, not just going to the Middle East, but going to even just to my neighbors. Years ago, I went to the city of New Philadelphia, which was about 20 minutes away from Holmes County, Ohio. And it was my first venture on my own. I had been up to Northern Youth Programs, to places with other peoples and other cultures. But this was the first chance for me to just plain go on my own. And I walked into the house, and I remember I rented this small little apartment, and I would get out of my car every night for the first week or two. And I was so scared of everyone that lived around there that I would just run in and shut the door and lock the door with the deadbolt. And then I would peek out of the mini blind and look out. And I remember later laughing because some of my friends and the youth would come to visit me, and they would be locking their cars and all number of things because they just were uncomfortable with the culture. I had a lot of fear in my life. I would not have viewed some of the people that I was with as my enemies, but I certainly didn't view them as my friends, and I was scared to go with them. And it took me away from the comfort of living close to my parents. In the same way, the Middle East, I will readily admit that during the wars that were in the past, secretly underneath, I was actually kind of like glad that the president was trying to take care of us as Americans and that we were safe. And I would never have told somebody that I viewed people in the Middle East as my enemies. But as they attacked Iraq, I can say this shamefully, that I thought, I was kind of glad that I hopefully will never have to see that in my life. I will be safer now from this point forward. So in a sense, when you look at Jonah and look at enemies, I possibly considered them some of my enemies. What's really a struggle is when I'm there today and I walk with Iraqi people around and they show me a field. I was driving with a vehicle, and the one man said, yeah, right there, that's where the U.S. bombed a factory and it's never been rebuilt. It's just an empty field now. There was people that died there right in that field. And I know as I was there that I was actually partially responsible for that as a member of this country. So it's a really hard thing for us to face. But these are three areas why Jonah didn't go. The question we ask is that reasons we don't go? Jonah knew what God wanted, but he didn't want to go. And do we know what God wants? And why are we not going? I guess I'd just love to leave this challenge with you as a group, is to really think about in your life, like how short your real life is. How short of a time period do you have on this earth? Why were you actually created to be born on this earth? Were you born specifically for this time period, for this time and place, with this opportunity, unprecedented, to actually fly into Iraq? You can fly into Iraq without a visa and simply say, I want to be a tourist for 30 days. It feels weird to go to the desk and say, I'm here in Iraq to be a tourist. And you wonder when they look at you like you're from America, why would you come to be a tourist here in Iraq? And then longer, if you want to stay there longer term, you have to have a residency card. But you say, well, I'm here to teach English and I'm here to build your country and to help your country. But we have unprecedented opportunities in front of us in many, many countries of the world. Serbia is a country that our group, we sent a team into Serbia, and we literally had people that were in the refugee camps in Serbia these were refugees that came out of Iran and out of Afghanistan. But some of the leaders in that refugee camp that were from that local area that are non-Muslim people, they said to us, like, there's huge tents here that we have set up for people to come and minister to these refugees. Like, you as an organization can come and work here freely. There's no restriction on any kind of teaching. You can have Bible studies. Why? Please just come. Use these tents that we have available. And we have to say, well, there's only four of us and we're going home in 2 weeks and we don't know if anyone's coming back. You know, we have unprecedented opportunities in front of us. Why not take what God has just placed right at our doorstep and be the good Samaritan in their lives and begin to walk and just begin to reach down, even though it's going to take our resources, it's going to take us maybe getting into a different place, it's going to delay maybe what we wanted in our life for our specific path in life. It's maybe going to delay that, but ultimately we're going to find what the calling is that God actually has for us in our life by some of the places that we are going to live and grow and develop relationships in. And in the process, we begin to see God receiving glory because people will have the knowledge of Jesus Christ in their life. And that's an amazing thing. And it's not just for Iraq. It's actually also here in the U.S., all over the U.S. maybe I'll just throw this out as well. Did you know that in the state of Nebraska, there is a huge group, in fact, it's the largest group of Yazidis other than in Iraq that are living. Right now, you can know English, and you can walk into Lincoln, Nebraska, and find a group of Yazidi people that are living right there in the United States, and they're simply unreached, simply because people are not going to them. So amazing opportunities are just all around us within the U.S. alone, much less the broader Middle East. So my challenge is just asking you the question, Jonah knew what God wanted, do you? And what are you going to do about that? And are you doing something about it? So I'm going to just end with this. How can you get involved? How can you get involved with any ministry? And for Kingdom Channels or otherwise, you can get involved by prayer. We're not in Iraq other than the fact that people prayed. And sometimes when I'm there, it feels a little bit like, have you ever been in a stream that has a river that has a flowing water that you almost can't hold yourself back because of the flow? There have been times when I was working in the work that we're doing there, and I suddenly felt like, you know what, this is supernatural. I suddenly jumped into the river of 1,000 prayers that people have prayed for the last 10 years, the last 20 years for the countries that are in the Middle East. And suddenly I'm at this time and place, and those prayers are just propelling me forward. Things that should have taken months to happen are just happening in literally a month or so. So amazing thing. The second thing is, and I think I probably shared it enough, but we need volunteers to go. We can use thousands of volunteers to go. The 5 billion people are so, that's such a huge number compared to our 20, 30 people that we have working in our ministry that are on the field. So volunteers are needed. We're especially looking for families that would be willing to spend part of their life living in the Middle East, hopefully more of your life. And then the last thing is just sending. How can you send people? And I want you to think about this, that it's not just sent into the Middle East, but it's sent into the peoples of the Middle East. It might be that they're living in a local city in the United States, or it might be people that are, you might be sending in a sense to go to Nebraska or some places like that. But reaching people that are Middle Eastern people that will then be going to take what you've given them, which is knowledge of Jesus Christ, and take it back to their own peoples. So sending. So pray, volunteer, or send. Those are three things. And I'm going to just give this just because I want you to have the ability to communicate with us if you need to in the future. We have a website that gives you some general information about our ministry. Hopefully it is just a connection point for you to ask questions through either email or otherwise to begin to dialogue. If you have had a burden on your heart for the peoples of the Middle East, we would love to talk to you. We'd love to talk to you about what God, what you could use as far as your gifts in the Middle East. We also have a unique thing that we have set up. We are just blessed in this timing in history right now to have some of the technology we have. If you use a smartphone and have a WhatsApp or Telegram app on your phone, you can talk directly across the world to those on another side of the world. So just this morning, I was looking at an update from our leader that's over there, and he was talking about the third area. We're seeking to establish a third base. And he just said, could you please pray? Because as I went in yesterday and this past week, he said the one place where he checked to rent a house for two or three couples that we have that are moving over in about a month. And they said, well, you can rent this house, but you may not teach the Bible here. They were really adamant against him. They said, you absolutely cannot teach the Bible in this place. Strong resistance in what he's doing because they don't want Christians to come in. The Muslim people don't want that. So amazing opportunity. But what we have with our WhatsApp or Telegram, if you send a message, add to this list, they will add you into an updates that we send out every week that will give you live updates right from the volunteers on the field that we just try to send about one a week to just give you a little bit of an up-to-date version of what's happening and maybe some prayer needs. So that's just an opportunity. So I don't have a lot more. I'm going to open up for questions, and I don't know if you've thought of any while you were here. One of the things before I open up for questions, maybe I'll just say, we have a number of resources on a table back in the back, a number of books that if you want to give a donation for, if you don't even have money today, you can send it in later, or we care enough about it that we don't even care if you don't give a donation. But just books that we would love for you to build vision. One is called Why God Calls Us to Dangerous Places, a book that we've given to many adult parents and asked them when their children came to us and just said, I want to go to the Middle East, and they said, why are my children wanting to go to the Middle East? It's not safe. Another book that is, there's several books back there, this one and a book called Killing Christians that are just individual stories, each chapter that just say, give a story of a refugee, specifically Muslim or Yazidi refugees that and how they found Christ and amazing stories that are involved in that. Another book, I don't know if you've heard of this before, called The Insanity of God, and it has sort of a weird title, filled with stories of a man that worked in Somalia, and as he went all across the world and looked at war-torn places or places that received persecution, he began to document those. And the question that he asked all of those believers, how did you stay strong? How were you able to survive in those countries? Because in the country of Somalia, where he was from, everyone that became a Christian that he knew almost was just killed instantly. How can the church survive in that environment? So it's a very good book. There's a number of others back there. So just access that, and we'd love for you to sign up for a newsletter if that's something that you would wish to get. Just communicate to us in any way that you would like. Anything that we have back there, we would love to put in your hands to enable vision to grow in your life for an area of the world that we're really passionate about. So is there any questions that people have? Go ahead. That's a good question. So his question was, he said landmines. We talked about landmines. There's a number of you that may not know what a landmine is. So a landmine is an object that was created by an army or somebody in an army that when you step on it or trip across maybe a wire that's attached to it, it will blow up. And the purpose of a landmine is specifically just to maim people and to hurt people. And so they often plant these in lines so that as you would come into an area, if you're not aware that it's there and would drive across an area, all of a sudden it would just begin to blow up and nobody would want to come into that area because it's there. What took place was that armies would put these in, sometimes in the houses that they left. They would put these in the houses and then leave. And so people coming in don't know they're there and suddenly will blow up. And what the sad part about it is that sometimes those things are there for years and no one knows that they're even there. They might be out in a field, and as a farmer begins to just start farming, all of a sudden it'll blow up and it'll blow his limbs off. What's really, really sad is that you have often young children that are the recipients of that, and they blow up and will blow both their limbs off or multiple limbs off. And so then for the rest of their life, they have no arms or legs or whatever got hurt. Some really, really sad situations with that. So yeah, that's a good question. And I've heard talks that there's decades of work of removing landmines. In fact, I sat beside someone that was on a plane that was working with a nonprofit that was not Christian. He's been working in the country of Iraq for about 3 or 4 years. And he said, oh, it's just ongoing. It'll probably be 10 or 20 years till we actually get them out. Lots and lots of work. But I imagine myself, the vision of, imagine a team of people diffusing these things. You know, why, the questions that come from that, why would you come over to my country? I mean, in fact, people ask us, why are you here? Why would you want to live in Iraq? Why would you not want to be in America? They want to come to America. Why would we want to live in Iraq? And you can start beginning to share it's because of Christ. Any other, yes, question. Yeah, ISIS as a group, they have been severely hindered because of their land. They had taken a large area of land, almost the size of Pennsylvania at one point. They've been pushed out of any control of most areas of land. But as a group, what it did was it just scattered them, that pushing back by armies of the world, just pushed them into all kinds of areas of the Middle East. So they still exist, but some of their leaders have been killed, and the ones that are there are embedded and very secretive then. And they are working, in fact, we hear stories of them beginning to go down into Africa and other places like that. As a group, though, there is still an ideology that's there that you can't kill, that's still there. There's a number of people that are supporting of that. So yeah, they are actually active. In fact, when we were there in Iraq, we were told that the city of Mosul, half the city was freed all the time. The other half was freed during the day, but during the evening, ISIS took over. So they would, as soon as the army would go home, because they didn't work 24/7, then the ISIS was in that area, it would be very unsafe to be there. So it's kind of a scary thing, honestly. At the same time, I don't want to scare you too bad, because it's actually, we felt very safe as a couple and as a group. We've never had any trouble being over there. It's sort of a reality of the Middle East, that there's a little bit uncertainty there. But do you have a question? Any other questions? One question I didn't address was, how much does it cost to live there? And I'll wrap up here shortly. It costs about $400 for a single volunteer to live there every month. And that pays for your food, your lodging, your vehicle use. We share everything. And essentially, we live as the book of Acts. because we all live in community. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing to be part of. I've never experienced that before. In fact, I came home feeling like this is the way life should be lived. So it takes about $400 a person. As a family, you can live for even much less than that. So exciting to be able to do that. One question I was hoping you'd ask was, how soon can I get there? How can... So we will give you the answers to that if you'll talk to us. It just takes a ticket that's maybe $1,000 to $2,000, depending on the time period. And you don't need no visa. You can walk in, and through the organization, we've had a supernatural connection with someone that will sign for us on that end of the world, that he's responsible for us. Every single person that goes over has to have someone from Iraq to sign for them to allow us to be able to live there long term. And we hold that very, very carefully. So I will turn the time back over to you. God bless you. Thanks a lot. We'd love to dialogue with you.